Before you listen to this entire audio course that gives you all that you're going to need to understand to handle your wife's midlife crisis, there's three things I want you to know. So hear this first. Number one, I really do understand your situation. Number two, there are things you must do to handle your situation. I'm going to tell you what those are. And number three, there are things you must not do in any circumstance to mess up your situation. I'm going to tell you what not to do. So let's start with number one. I really do understand your situation, and I'm not just saying I do, I have proof. Over the last 5 years, I've conducted 1,076 one-hour private interviews with men and women whose spouses were in the midlife crisis. I know your situation in detail because I know theirs in detail. And some of these leaving wives cut their husbands off completely and wouldn't communicate at all. Some already filed for divorce or were rushing it. Some of the husbands had to deal with mediation, attorneys, pressures to make decisions. Some of these wives were locked into dreamy affairs with another man. Some of these wives had Christian beliefs. Some of them were cold and insensitive. Some of these wives could occasionally feel guilty about their behavior at times. Some were still living in the house in a separate room, while other wives had already moved out. And some of these leaving wives had their families siding with them against their husbands, while others had wives whose families sided with the staying husband against the unfaithful wife. Well, some of the husbands were dependent on their wife's income, and other husbands were the breadwinner when their wives fell into the midlife crisis. All kinds of situations. Well, I created the Hear This First recording to prepare you for my midlife crisis course because husbands need to know what they need to do, and I'm going to cover that here. But the second point I need to make is that you must not do the things on the do not list that will hurt you all kinds of ways. But before I get into this, I'm going to again reinforce this one idea. You're going to be hearing in the course itself, but it really does bear repeating. You must decide if you want this woman before you handle anything. I can give you the what to do and the what not to do. First, you must decide, do you really want this woman? Or all is lost regarding my advice. Decide if you want this woman before you handle anything. And don't be wishy-washy. Don't be undecided. Most of all, don't be afraid. Decide an answer to the question, do you want this woman? And as you'll learn in the course, you are married to two women, the woman you love and the monster you don't. So when I ask, do you want this woman, I'm talking about the original girl you fell in love with. So answer the question. If you answer yes, I do want this woman, I don't want the monster she's become, then we're ready to get started on the practical side of what you have to do now to handle what's going on and what you must not do. All right, now the first thing we need to do is deal with living arrangements. Now, when a wife is in a midlife crisis, she's not one woman, she is two, as I said. Well, one is good, one is evil. Now, you're going to learn all about this in the course, but for right now, remember that the monster within your wife is as selfish can be. This monster wants nothing to do with you. It does not care about you. It does not want you to succeed. In fact, it wants you to fail in every possible way. In order to make sure that happens, the monster will tell you every horrible thing it can, whether it's true or never true. This monster is both cruel and sinister. You cannot debate with it. You cannot reason with it. And I'm saying this to get you to understand that when the monster comes out of your wife, you must not get into a discussion about literally anything. Now, what do I mean by the word anything? I mean any subject at all. Do not discuss custody arrangements, money, living arrangements, legal arrangements, children separation situations, your previous relationship history together. I hope you're getting this. I mean literally anything. The reason that you must not discuss literally anything with the monster is that you cannot win. Nothing good can come of it. As you will learn in the course, the woman is not the monster. The monster is not the woman. You must separate the two. You must consciously make the separation. You must literally think to yourself, now, is this the woman or is this the monster? By the way, you never speak the words, are you the woman or are you the monster? Keep that to yourself. I'm asking you to think consciously about the separation so that when the monster arrives, you'll make certain that you do what I'm going to talk about next. This next subject is titled, what to do when the monster arrives. Now, I'm talking about this because men ask me this all the time. What should I do? What should I say around my wife? So I'm giving you the guidelines of exactly what to do and say around your wife. Now, when this evil entity takes over your wife, you know it because you can see it in her eyes. Now, every man I've ever interviewed whose wife is in a midlife crisis has told me something to the effect of, I can see it in her eyes. It's clearly not my wife. So as you listen to this, you can relate because you've seen it in her eyes as well. And that's what I'm asking you to do now. If you see the monster in the eyes, you must go into what I call the monster plan. It's the same with a phone call. When you hear the monsters in the voice, that manipulative, that arrogant tone, yeah, that's the monster, not your wife. So what is the monster plan? It is literally a plan where you alter your behavior to deal with the monster within your wife. You alter your behavior because you must. The problem that men have is they keep trying to behave as if their wife is still herself. Huge mistake. That would be like attempting to talk to the family dog as if he was human and you could have a conversation. That would be insane. The monster plan requires you to consciously realize that the monster has taken over your wife's body, and because of that, you must behave in a totally different way than you normally behave around your human wife. The monster plan requires that you calm down when the monster is trying to rile you up, and you do that by saying the word calm over and over again to yourself. As you say the word calm to yourself, you also begin breathing in more deeply than usual, and you breathe out more deeply than usual. These deep in and out breaths will assist you in creating more internal calm. They calm your emotions when the monster is trying to kick everything up a notch. As you're thinking the word calm over and over again, and as you do the deep breathing, you then decide to become a certain movie character. Now, what character am I suggesting that you become? Well, I'm suggesting you become your favorite detective that you've seen in many movies and television series. You know what I'm talking about. When a story has a detective hero, he's always very shrewd and wise around the criminal, you know. He asks the criminal questions that are very insightful. He doesn't jump to conclusions. He never accuses, but he does ask questions. So that's what you're going to do during the monster plan. You're going to ask open-ended questions. And there is a strategy behind this. The strategy is that the monster must always stay off guard. He must not gain any momentum in his plan to destroy your family. And to make him off guard, he has to be confused. Your detective hero is the one who will ask the questions that confuse. Now, when you become the detective hero, you're no longer the fearful guy. You're no longer the anxious, worried, needy husband. That's a bad character for you anyway. You are the confident detective who has years of experience dealing with criminals. He knows what he's doing. He's confident and certain because he knows his adversary, and you're going to act the part. Now, I need you to get this into your imagination so that when the monster plan begins and you see the look in your wife's eyes that the monster has indeed arrived, you can switch into detective mode. And let's talk about what happens when you are the detective hero and the monster has arrived. So you begin saying the word calm to yourself while you start your deep breathing. Then you physically get up and slowly move around the room. Now, do not look directly into the monster's eyes. You don't want eye contact. You want to do what the detective hero does. As he walks around the room, he's looking for clues and evidence. Think Sherlock Holmes, even as he asks questions. He does this because it makes the criminal nervous, and it works. And when you are anxious and worried, or worse, angry and revengeful, staring directly at your opponent is what you'll end up doing. Well, standing and looking for confrontation becomes what obsesses you, so that's no good. If you do that, you're going to lose because you're feeding the monster the food that gives him strength. This is a definite do not do. So pick your detective character that you like and visualize yourself acting like he does. You can even practice in the mirror so you can get comfortable with it. In fact, you can have fun with it. So get up, move around the room, look at things as if you're examining them and ask questions. And as you do, you know, what do the questions sound like? Well, they sound like this. I was thinking that very thing the other day, and I started to wonder what would happen to our children's feelings if they had to live with this decision. I mean, how would they feel? And then you'd add something that's salt in the wound to the monster. You make some little after comment like, oh, I don't know, just something to consider. See, the questions you ask are not directly addressing what the monster's bringing up. The monster has two plans. Attack the husband's failure, make demands on the husband. So it doesn't matter what your words are, the monster will do these things over and over. Attack your failures, make demands on you. In some way, shape, or form, your failures are going to be identified, demands are going to be made on you. Don't get upset. This is the way it's done. Know your enemy. It's not the woman you married. The monster is just using your wife's mouth. Now, another example of distracting and useless questions to ask the monster would be something like this. I wonder why that would be a good idea. I mean, would that in some way be a benefit to the kids? And then your little after comment, something like, I think that's reasonable, maybe something that might be considered. Now, notice the words might, may. These types of word choices are deliberate because they're not absolute. They diffuse. They're uncertain. The monster wants you to be confrontational, accusatory, wants you to say things like you never and you always. Well, that's what gives the monster strength, but you're not going to give the monster strength. Get it into your conscious mind. You are not conversing with a human being. You are conducting a strategy. You are distracting a family invader. It's also important that you remember not to stay in that detective role for too long in the room. And I'm suggesting 5 to 7 minutes would be the upper limit of how long you'd stay in the detective role. And then you have to leave the room. Now that means leaving the monster behind. It could mean leaving the room, or it could mean leaving the house for a temporary moment. It could be leaving the restaurant. It could also mean that you do something like, you know, goes into doing the laundry or an improvement project or make a phone call to another person on some other subject. At times, the monster will want to pursue you after you become the detective. And that's when you need to move out of the detective role and into your thinker role. What is the thinker? You remember the statue titled The Thinker by the artist Rodin? If you're not familiar with this sculpture, just Google The Thinker. Then click on the images and you'll see the thinker statue. It's a statue of a man sitting with his hand up to his face as he's sitting down looking and thinking very intensely. I want you to look up that image so you can keep that image in your mind when you become this character, the thinker. Put your hand to your forehead and you wrinkle your brow. You become the thinker. Once again, this is a distraction to deal with the monster. You do not deal with the monster with conversation or talking about subjects that actually matter. When you're dealing with the monster, nothing matters. That's why you use distraction strategies, because you're waiting for the moments when the real girl arrives. I'll be talking about that in a bit. Now picture yourself as the thinker with your hand to your forehead, and you wrinkle your brow, and you have this serious, thoughtful look, and you're looking down. And as you do that, you say things like, I get your point. Yeah, it's a lot to think about. I've been thinking a lot about things, at least things lately. Serious topic. It requires a lot of thought. I'm not ready to handle that right now. A lot to think about. All right, you picture yourself talking in a slow and serious way as you look down with this furrowed brow, one hand to your forehead, massaging your temples. You appear lost in thought. See, the monster can't do much because you're not talking to the monster. It's like you're talking to yourself. So you give the monster nothing it wants. It wants you to be directly against it, but you are not. And now there's nothing the monster can do to stop that. He's being diffused. He's not being fed the conflict he wants. So you have two characters that you're going to become, the detective and the thinker. And you don't do them at the same time. The scene has to change, and when it does, your character changes. Now, this might seem nonsensical to you or illogical. I want you to understand that this is the exact strategy. I'm urging you again, do not deal with the monster as if it is human, as if it was your actual girl, the girl you love. It's not her. Do not deal with the monster as if you can have a reasonable conversation. You cannot. Nothing about this monster is reasonable. Nothing about it is rational. If you keep thinking that you can talk to the monster like you can talk to the woman you're married, you're putting yourself on the edge of insanity. You're going to learn in the actual course where the monster comes from and why it has a life of its own. But to deal with the monster, you must create distraction, as I'm saying. All the while, you must remember that your wife, the girl you love, is in there. She is listening, but she is not understanding what you're doing. You must also remember your wife is confused because she doesn't know what's happening to her. She's confused about who she is, or what she wants, about what she should do. She doesn't know. And when you become the detective or the thinker, she's remaining in that confused state. But when the monster takes over her body, your wife will not understand what's happening to her. She's just being carried along for the ride. And we know this because all the women who have ever come out on the other side of a midlife crisis, once they're truly themselves and human again, they talk with regret about the behaviors that possess them. All of them do. And they all say the words in one form or another. They say, I have no idea who that woman was. See? The monster. So now you can clearly see there is a separation between the woman you married and the monster that takes her over. Now that you have a basic understanding that the woman and the monster are not the same, let's get to the issue of how you deal with situations. As you might guess, it all depends on whether the girl is herself or whether the monster is here. If you have any doubt about whether it's the monster or the woman, just look at her eyes and see if the girl is there. And when you do see your wife and not the monster that possesses her, you will see she's in a lot of pain. She's confused and frustrated. She wishes she could blame you for everything. That would be convenient. But the monster within is tormenting her and drives her away from family. And you cannot teach her that, so don't try. This is information she could not hear, she could not understand. Now, other men have tried to teach this, explain this. They all failed. This is pick and shovel work, as it were. It's a slow, careful excavation. I talked about seeing the monster when you look in her eyes. But sometimes the monster can be on the phone. And I covered that earlier with voice inflection. And then there's email and text. Here it's obvious by the word choices and the way the words are put together that you can recognize them as monster words. They're judgmental, they're harsh, they're critical, or they're silly or some other extreme. Texts and emails are easy to see whether the monster is there or not. So when you see the monster type phrases and word choices, you can choose not to respond at all, or you can make short and concise responses. There is no need to get into the detective role or the thinker role when you're dealing with a text or an email. Just be short and concise. Don't go on and on. Let me also talk about what happens when the woman herself arrives in her own body. You need to understand that the monster lives in cycles. He has high cycles, and then he's forced into low cycles. In the high cycles, he's very strong. He's a terror. But when he's forced into a down cycle, your wife will actually come out and be herself. She actually can control her own voice and body. And when you see the actual woman, it's important that you talk to her in a way that you would talk to any person who is in a hospital bed, sick. Just think about how you would behave at the bedside of a sick person. You'd be very patient. You'd ask how she's feeling. You might talk about when she expects to get better, how things are going to get better. That's the way you talk when you're talking to a person who's sick in a hospital bed. Now, be prepared to hear a lot of confusing talk when she's herself. Remember, you're in the hospital. She's in the bed, okay? So don't think that you're going to make big decisions because she happens to be here now. And don't think you're going to have important conversations about your future or anything like that. Don't talk about the past relationship. Your wife is herself for a little while, maybe an hour, 6 hours, a day. But the monster is going to return, and I'm urging you, do not fool yourself into thinking that your wife is now herself and everything's going to be okay. It's not going to be okay, because the midlife crisis doesn't end like that. She's going to be into the monster, and the girl's going to be gone, and then the girl's going to come back. So expect those cycles. That's normal. That brings us to situations such as who lives in the house. Now let's get clear on this. The one who wants to destroy the family is the one who leaves the house. Okay? Let's imagine that a teenage son was enraged at his father and demanded the father get out of the house. That would be crazy. The father bought the house, owns the house, pays the mortgage. Father doesn't leave the house. It would be crazy to think that the father should leave. The person who is reasonable and rational gets to stay in the house. The person who is not in their right mind has to go. Now be clear on this, because the monster wants to kick you out of your own house. As time continues to go by, the monster within your wife wants to be in a battle with you. And that means he wants to unseat you emotionally. And in order to do that, he's going to threaten you with legal threats, children threats, sometimes depending on who your wife is. She can go into a self-destructive spin of self-pity, where the words come out like, oh, you deserve better than me. Don't listen to that. Stay on the mission. The mission is distraction. That is why you have your detective and your thinker character always ready to defuse the monster with vague philosophical questions and uncertainty. In no case will you ever go head-to-head with the monster. You will lose. Do not deal with him on his strength. He wants you to be against him because then he can defeat you. And by defeat, here's what I mean. He'll take everything you care about. And remember, there is no deadline on divorce. The monster wants you to believe that there's some kind of impending deadline. But the courts have no deadline. The lawyer has no deadline. Only the monster within your wife has a deadline. And since you have no respect for the monster in any way, he's kidnapped your wife, you will delay and delay and delay. Now let's talk attorneys. At some point, if your wife is really a strong chaos kid and came from a painful childhood, and if she comes from a divorce home where her mother and father divorced sometime between birth and her teen years, she is programmed to divorce. If this is the case, There's a very good chance you're going to need your own attorney. But if you find an attorney, I would urge you to look for only an attorney that has represented husbands, an attorney that wins for husbands. So when you interview an attorney, you need to find one who wins cases for fathers if you don't have kids, then one who represents men without children. Be specific. Don't look for an attorney that simply does divorces. You need to make it clear to the attorney that you're interviewing that you want an attorney with a proven track record of representing fathers with kids or men without kids, depending on your situation. And again, I'm going to say it, this is only if your wife is a real chaos kid with a lot of childhood pain, really troubled parents. You know, they divorced and lots of trouble before and after. So that means the monster has the childhood energy, so you're going to need an attorney to make sure you protect the safety and the rights of your children. Once you hire your attorney, you have one mission, and that is to secure your financial rights and secure your children's time and emotional connection to both mom and dad. Now, you hire the attorney, and he or she works for you. If you get confused about your goal, your attorney might just get confused too. So stay focused. It is not to create a completed divorce. It is to represent your financial rights and your children's emotional and financial rights. Now, always ask yourself the question, what do our kids need most right now? And what do I need most right now? Keep asking those questions. You'll stay on the goal. I'll say it one more time. Your wife, the woman you fell in love with, has nothing to do with what's going on. It's now the monster you're dealing with, and that's why you're taking this midlife crisis course. If your wife comes from a home where mom and dad stayed married, and it wasn't real painful, a chaotic home, then one fact alone buys you time. She's programmed not to divorce, but she's programmed possibly to stay married. So you can put off getting the attorney for longer because your wife has more strength internally to resist her own monster who is determined to create separation or divorce. Now, if you really did love your wife, and you let her know in many ways during your marriage years, then you have a history of really loving her. The woman inside remembers that. If she doesn't have too much chaos in her childhood, the woman still wants to love you back. So as a general rule, the better her childhood, the less you need the lawyer. But the more painful her childhood, the more you need the lawyer to protect yourself and your kids. Now, I'd like to deal with the woman who will not communicate at all. Now, there are women who are programmed for their childhoods to be abandoned or to abandon. Abandonment is an energy that happens to some children, and that abandonment stays in them when they become adults. Now, abandonment energy takes two forms in a woman. The first is, I will abandon you before you abandon me. The second is, I will monitor you and watch you and suspect you and make sure you don't abandon me. So the two forms are both bad. One finds your wife running away from you. The other finds you with a possessive, anxious wife. So this is the result of her being abandoned in childhood. There is no question about it. It's always the case. So if your wife was abandoned in her childhood, she is running away from you now and isn't going to communicate. In other words, she completely abandons you, just like in her childhood, her father or her mother abandoned her. It's as if she was kidnapped, and she really was. She was kidnapped by the monster within, who took that abandonment energy and cut off all communication from you. Now, your question is, what do I do about that? Now, throughout this talk, I'm dwelling on two words, acceptance and gratitude. I keep coming back to these two words because they have the most powerful energy on earth when it comes to an intimate relationship. Acceptance and gratitude, aimed at a woman who is full of abandonment energy, can actually weaken the monster within her. And when that happens, the woman can begin to feel safer with you. But I'll caution you, you cannot change from acceptance and gratitude over to worry, anxiety, and fear, and then expect to go back again. If you start with acceptance and gratitude, you must keep it up. That's when you get results. When you create acceptance for everything and gratitude for everything as it is, you're thankful, and that is a magnetic energy. That magnetic energy can take a woman who is hiding and start to bring her back so you at least see signs that she's beginning to communicate, even if the issues she communicates on are very shallow. But it's a start. The typical thing when their wives refuse to communicate and move far away is that these husbands fall into more anxiety and more fear and worry. They're plagued by loneliness and self-doubt. These are horrible energies. And they guarantee your wife is going to stay far away in the land of abandonment, and then you're going to be abandoned. So rather than that, take the path of acceptance and gratitude and stick with it. Now let's talk about an affair. If your wife is in an affair, it could be because she was programmed by her mother to be a cheater. Now that would be extreme, but possible. If your wife is in the affair now, and this is the first time it ever happened in your marriage, then she's not a serial cheater. This is a woman who was thrown into midlife crisis pain. She was looking for relief, and some man was around when she needed some emotional caring. You weren't ready to give it. He swooped in on the opportunity. But I have to caution you, don't dwell on the man. The more you're against the guy she's having the affair with, the stronger their bond becomes. I'll say that again because it's hard to hear. The more you're against, angry at, fed up with the man she's having the affair with, the more the energy coming out of you will drive them closer together. On the subject of an affair, the less you think about that man, the calmer you are, the more gratitude you have, the more you accept everything as it is, the more the energy you send out diffuses their connection. So you can see that being against the man and obsessing over him is one of the worst things you can do, because it actually draws them closer together. There are actually scientific reasons for this. So start imagining that you're becoming the enjoyable boyfriend while her boyfriend transforms into the negative husband. Imagine that. So if you have a wife who's in an affair, focus on great memories the two of you have. Remain very calm. Remember your wife is being possessed by a monster she can't control. And then look for everything to have gratitude for and accept it. If you follow this, everything will go much better for you. Now, I talked about the detective and the thinker. This is the strategy for when the monster arrives. But if it's your wife who arrives, and she seems to be moving between monster and then herself, here are your behavior guidelines. Number one, give her no pressure. Number two, stay calm. Number three, have lots of internal gratitude, lots of acceptance for who she is. That energy comes out of you and it's felt. What she's become and what she's going through, you're understanding it, you're accepting it, you have gratitude for it. The energy you give off changes a lot of things. You're hearing me use the word acceptance and gratitude many times. Acceptance and gratitude are the goal words. They are the bullseye you're aiming at. The more you're focused on acceptance and gratitude for everything, the more you will avoid all the big mistakes. You will not plead. You won't be needy. You won't be judgmental. You won't have self-pity. All the negative behaviors will disappear as long as you're focused on acceptance and gratitude. Two words, easy to remember. You know, I talk about what to do if she has an affair, but now I'm going to talk about outsiders who are coming into your intimate relationship. And I'll start with family members, mothers, fathers, sister, brothers. Two kinds of family members during a midlife crisis. The family that's against you and the family that's for you. Let's deal with the family that's against you first. The family that's against you is possessed by the same monster that produced your wife in her midlife crisis. If they are against you, then all the rules I'm giving you still apply. I reminded you earlier not to focus on the boyfriend who's trying to steal your wife. In the same way, do not focus or think about or dwell on the family members trying to destroy your marriage. If you don't look at it, it tends to go away. But if you dwell on it, think about it, then it will become like a magnet that's drawn to you, and there's scientific proof for that. That's because against energy is magnetic. The more you're against, the more frustrated you are, the more anxious and fearful you are, the more you magnetize all of these emotions and they actually turn into bad events in real time. Certainly not what you want. But acceptance and gratitude is also magnetic. The more you accept everything as it is, the more you have gratitude for all that is, the more your acceptance and gratitude actually happen, and thus you get more of what you want. Once again, acceptance and gratitude are the target. They're the goal. They're the bullseye. So on the off chance you're not hearing me, I am telling you to dwell on accepting everything as it is and then having gratitude for everything as it is, no matter how bad it seems in the moment. Now let's get to what I call your caring, angry friends. These could be your own family members who care about you and are angry at your wife for what she's doing, or they can be your friends who think that you're wonderful and your wife is horrible. I want to caution you about this strongly. This is a trap. These are caring people who are angry and against your wife because they don't know she's possessed by this monster. They would never accept that idea anyway, so you shouldn't share it with them. So what I'm giving you is advice on how to deal with your caring, angry friends. You like these people, so you must kindly move them out of your intimate relationship, because they're not going to help you. They're just going to try to increase the against energy you give off. Well, we can't have that. So what you say to caring, angry friends and family alike is something like this. You'd say something like, you know, I really appreciate your help and you've been so kind. But you know, at some point in life, everybody goes through something like this, and it's a really just a matter of just getting through it. And I think I'm getting the help I need now, and I think we're going to get through it okay. So if you were going through the same kind of thing, I'm sure I'd feel the same way. So I really appreciate all you've done for me. All right, that's what you'd say. Now, what you have done in that statement is you've given your caring, angry friends what they really wanted. They wanted you to thank them for their caring. When they have your thanks, they're diffused. And when you get to the part where you say, you know, everybody goes through this sometime in their life, you're really saying that this is temporary. It's all going to turn out okay. Once they feel that confidence from you, they stop feeling they have to protect you. And that's how you make your caring, angry friends leave your intimate relationship alone. You know, the truth is they have no business in your intimate relationship anyway. The reason men seek out caring, angry friends is because their wives' rejection makes them feel so alone. But you're not alone. You've got many caring friends who just need to know what their limits are. And the limit is your job to set. Once you tell each of these friends this message I shared with you, they're going to be able to support the confident man who knows what he's doing. And that would be you. And then they are going to realize that they don't have to worry about you. And that's the goal here. I want to make a special statement if you're married to a woman with a Christian belief system. Now, there's all degrees of Christian beliefs. But if your marriage relationship was based on talking about your beliefs together, then I would urge you to make sure you stay away from any statement that has something to do with what you believe God wants or does not want. Something like, you know, God doesn't approve of a divorce, something like that. And here's the reason I'm saying this. The monster within hates God unless he can use God. And if you give the monster the statement that amounts to a statement like, you know, God would not want you to do this, then the monster in her is going to use that to generate lots of against energy to judge and condemn you more fiercely. So if your wife has a Christian belief system, then allow her to struggle with that belief system within herself. You're not in a position to bring her a Christian message at this time in her life. And the reason you're not is because the monster within has just made you the enemy. Now, I want to address something, and I'll also talk about this in the main course that you're about to begin. It's the question that's worded like this: are we too far gone? Now, the reason people ask this is because they really can't stand conflict. They wish the conflict would just dry up and blow away and leave them alone. They ask the question, are we too far gone, because they want relief. That's because if somebody outside would just say, yeah, your marriage is too far gone, now there's no more conflict, because now somebody's given you permission to give up on your marriage. There is no more conflict. After all, we're too far gone, right? I am saying that a question like, are we too far gone, is an unproductive question. It's a question that begs you to say, yes, we are. That's why the question is unproductive. A much better question would be, do I want this woman? When you answer that question decisively, you gather all your resources, all your determination. You gather your morals and your moral compass and everything that points in one direction. And that is to stay with this job you have. In my Environment Changer course, I teach men how to kill the monster within them, which dries up and suffocates the monster within their wives, which ultimately gets their wives released. It's not a simple job, and neither is it quick, but the course transforms these men's lives so they can be the man they truly are, regardless of the way they were programmed in childhood, and it has a major influence on their wives. But if you are not an Environment Changer, and you may never be one, I'm delivering this course for everything you need right now, and it's based on behavior. But I will say it again, acceptance and gratitude are your best friends. The more you can generate, the weaker the monster in your wife will be. So now it's time to get into the main midlife crisis course itself. So let's get started.